and the lighter shades of meadows and rolling farmland.
Penny for your thoughts, Adams whispered from beside my command chair.
Ah.
I reached up to blot away a tear that was forming at the corner of one eye before I looked back and up at her.
A lot of memories there.
She squeezed my shoulder with one hand, an intimate gesture that felt completely natural. Adams and I had put boots on the ground there with UNEF when we had dreams of being a badass force that would kick humanity's enemy the Ruhar off the surface. Instead, we had been fumbling peacekeepers, realizing too late we were fighting on the wrong side of the war. Patrolling in the jungles of Nigeria had wiped away any silly boyish illusions I had about military service, but paradise is where I really grew up, I think. Adams and I had been there, and we had been back on the surface during the mission to help Perkins reactivate a network of Mesa projectors. Adams and I had history there, a history that did not need any words to express. I reached back and squeezed a hand. Then she offered a fist, and I bumped it solemnly.
"Those people," she whispered, "think they're cut off from Earth forever. That human life on Earth may not exist anymore."
"Yeah," I breathed heavily. "If there were anything we could do for them."
"Someday," she declared with fierce determination. "No matter how long it takes. Semper fidelis."
"Never give up, never surrender," I replied with a ghost of a smile. The problem was the only way we could bring people from paradise to Earth was if our secret was exposed, at which point Earth might be a cloud of loosely organized rocks drifting around the sun.
"Never give up," she agreed. "Never surrender."
Then we ejected a modified flight recorder buoy and jumped outside the system. After we jumped, the buoy we left behind would wait 20 minutes in case a Ruhar ship jumped in to investigate our gamma ray burst and the nearby one left by the Spirit. The buoy would then transmit a message that the ship the Ruhar had no doubt detected burning up in the outer layer of the star was the ship that tried to bring infected keepers to paradise, and that mission was canceled and over. The buoy also contained a detailed chemical analysis of the pathogen Skippy had run while the Keeper's dropships were still in flight. That might help ease some of the restrictions against humans on Paradise, but our people would not truly be safe until we delivered a vaccine and cure, if Skippy could do that. The Ruhar might not believe our message about destroying the Spirit, because they didn't know who we were and we couldn't tell them. Besides, just because we killed one ship of murderous assholes did not mean the Ruhar were safe. Some other group of Kristang could deliver the bioweapon to Paradise or wherever humans lived with Ruhar. With that depressing thought and the last image of Paradise lingering in my retinas, I needed something to distract me from seeing the display was now showing only empty interstellar space. Rising from my chair, I announced, "It's time to meet those idiot keepers. Gunny, you're with me."
"Sir."
She did not move, blocking my way.
"Much as I'd love to slap those keepers around, I don't think it's right."
"Adams," I cocked my head, "you don't understand. I'm not inviting you to give them a beatdown. I need you there to make sure I don't give them a beatdown."
The airlock cycled and I strode into the docking bay, Adams right beside me. The two captured Dragon dropships were resting securely in their cradles, without the usual umbilical cables hooked up, and with their flight capability and weapon systems disabled. By disabled, I mean physically we had removed any components that might create a danger to us, or to the keepers injuring themselves. I wanted the keepers to not have a way to hurt us, and I wanted them to know for certain they had no possibility of harming us or escaping, so they would not waste time and effort defiantly and uselessly fighting back against us.
"Ready?" I asked Adams without turning to look at her.
We were wearing Kristang armored suits, sealed up to prevent us from becoming infected. The docking bay was cut off from the rest of the ship, its air supply and water being recycled independently. The only way in or out was through two secure airlocks we controlled. One airlock led to a chamber that scrubbed the exterior of suits clean, with caustic chemicals, ferocious nanomachines, and flamethrowers. Anything organic on the surface of the suits, even in the tiny gaps of joints, would be dissolved, then burned to dust, while the suits would only be mildly cooked. The assault teams led by Smythe and Giraud were going through the decontamination chamber now, two of them at a time. After the dropships were secured, Smythe had led his people through the airlock, and Skippy released the zip ties binding the keepers. A gentle stimulant gas was pumped into the dropship cabins, and soon the keepers were stirring, frightened, confused, and angry. By the time I walked over to stand between the back ramps of the dropships, the still somewhat groggy keepers had lowered the ramps, and a half dozen of them were angrily confronting the four armor-suited pirates who were pointing shotguns at them. As I approached, one of the pirates saluted me, a gesture we usually dispensed with aboard ship.
"Colonel?"
Lieutenant Williams acknowledged me, and I saluted him back. The exterior of our Kristang-powered armored suits had a chameleon feature that could be manipulated by the wearer or by Skippy. For our encounter with the Keepers, my suit's exterior had been modified to include symbols for UNEF, the American flag, my Eagle rank insignia, plus texts spelling out U.S. Army, and my last name.
"Colonel?"
One of the Keepers looked at me suspiciously. They already knew we were human, wearing Kristang armor, because our faceplates were transparent. He stiffened and saluted me, announcing,
"I'm Colonel Chisholm. You are..."
His eyes narrowed as he looked between my name tag and my face, illuminated by lights rimming my faceplate.
"Bishop? The Barney guy?"
he guessed with a mixture of shock and disgust.
"You're that publicity stunt colonel from Paradise. Why are you still wearing that rank insignia?"
That remark got me hot under the collar, or helmet to be accurate.
"You're a colonel now?"
I barked at him, my amplified voice booming in the docking bay. "Last we heard, you were a captain, and you left the service, so you're nothing now. I should call you Colonel Goddamn Sanders, you chicken shit. You lost the honor of wearing a uniform when you betrayed your own people."
"You?
Wait." Chisholm got a puzzled look that overrode the redness of anger on his face.
"You left? You?"
He snapped his fingers.
"Yeah, you stole a dodo and left Paradise. We all thought you were dead."
"Rumors of my death have been greatly exaggerated," I bit back a harsher reply.
"You're still not a legit colonel."
He crossed his arms and looked to his people, more of whom were recovered enough to stumble down the back ramps. The keepers nodded in agreement. Clearly Chisholm was the de facto leader of that group of fanatical idiots.
"I have a Theranin starship," I pointed to the deck, "and a dozen nukes, and a cargo bay stuffed full of ship-killer missiles, and a team of special operations troops and pilots under my command. My authority comes straight from UNEF Command on Earth."
"Bullshit," Chisholm retorted, but his eyes flickered with uncertainty.
"You've been to Earth?"
another keeper asked in a British accent, followed by a guilty look at Chisholm. That is interesting, I thought. The bogus keeper colonel's control of his team was not as secure as he pretended. Having the team's mission to Paradise intercepted by a group of lowly humans must have shaken their confidence in him and themselves. I needed to remind myself that these keepers knew nothing about the merry band of pirates and the status of Earth, although would anything I said matter to them? In front of me were the most fanatical of the keepers, chosen for the mission to infect Paradise because they could be trusted not to change their minds when confronted with reality on the ground.
"Yes, we have. I've been back to Earth twice. Most of this crew," I gestured to Williams and his team, "never served on Paradise."
"That's true," Williams added, his shotgun not wavering.
"I joined the ship at Earth. I've only been back once, but we're on our way home."
"We are going home. After," I corrected him, "we confirmed the lizard op to wipe out the population of Paradise is over."
"Excuse me, Colonel Bishop."
The British keeper stepped away from Chisholm, but not toward me or my people holding shotguns. Wisely, he held his hands up away from his body.
"We heard the wormhole back to Earth was shut down. Dormant."
"That wormhole is not closed," I announced, prompting a gasp from the keepers. They murmured among themselves while Adams spoke over a private channel.
"Should you have told them that?" she asked with a tone of reproach.
"One way or another, Gunny, they sure as hell are never telling the outside galaxy about our secret. And the fact that we are able to fly back to Earth will tell them that wormhole is not really dormant."
"Good point, sir," she acknowledged.
"Joe," Skippy whispered in my ear, "that British guy is Lieutenant Nigel Green." I enabled my helmet speakers again.
"You're Nigel Green?"
I asked. The guy nodded with a glance at Chisholm. None of them were wearing name tags or were carrying any form of identification. "Your family back home is alive and well," I recalled from the briefing packet Skippy provided before the two dropships reached the Flying Dutchman. From facial recognition, the beer can knew the identity of the Keepers, and he fed into my earpiece details about their families and friends on Earth. Your sister Susan had a baby boy she named Trevor, after one of your grandfathers.
He's lying, Green, Chisholm warned. Don't listen to him. You don't have any proof, do you?
He said that last while glaring at me. Joe, Skippy whispered in my ear again. I have photos of the baby, but photos can be faked. It doesn't matter anyway. These people are true, close-minded fanatics. Facts will not sway their minds because they are desperately clinging to their beliefs. It is the only thing they have left. You have to appeal to them emotionally.
I know that, Skippy, and you're wrong. I don't have to do anything for these idiots.
Turning my external speakers back on, I addressed Green first. I do have proof, but you won't believe it. The proof you will believe is when you see your nephew for yourself. As our SEALs team leader, I jerked a thumb at Williams, said, we are headed home. Stepping forward, I got close enough to Chisholm to touch him. To his credit, he didn't flinch, though I was taller and encased in a mech suit. There are over 100,000 humans stranded on Paradise. Loyal soldiers smartened up and accepted the cold reality that we got suckered and used by the Kristang, that we were fighting on the wrong side of the war. No, I exclaimed as Chisholm opened his mouth to protest. You shut your mouth. I followed that with a powered armor jab to his chest with an index finger. It knocked him back, but only made him angry. The loyal troops on Paradise are stuck there, while you, you traitorous dumb motherfuckers, get to go home. You are going home to Earth. You get to see your families again. It makes me sick, I said, without exaggeration, as I could taste bile rising in my throat, and I had to blink away tears of frustrated rage at the injustice. I have friends on Paradise, good people, who will never get a chance to go to Earth and see their loved ones. It disgusts me that your treason gives you a free ticket home. I would like to toss every one of you traitors out an airlock, but I won't do that. I jabbed Chisholm in the chest again. It had to hurt, and he was starting to react by taking small steps backward. He knew he couldn't hurt me or stop me from hurting him. I so much wanted to do a Darth Vader move on Chisholm, hold him up off the deck by his neck and squeeze with my powered gloves. I can't do that because I am a soldier and I follow a code of conduct. Colonel, Adam spoke aloud, reaching out a hand to restrain my arm. Chisholm must have an angry bruise on his chest. Colonel Bishop, Green called for my attention, and I turned toward him.
You said something about an operation to wipe out the population of Paradise. What operation?
Yours, I stated simply. That's why you were out there.
We?
Green's eyes shifted rapidly between me and Chisholm.
We weren't doing that. Our mission was to infiltrate the planet, to gather intelligence and prepare for the Kristang to retake the planet.
I laughed bitterly. The hamsters have a full battle group based at Paradise now, and they're building a strategic defense network in orbit. After that SD net is complete, the goddamn lizards will have a hell of a fight to even get close to the surface. Besides, your lizard friends are in a full-scale civil war. They didn't tell you about that, I added as I saw Chisholm's eyebrows lift in surprise.
Yeah,
the lizards will happily be busy killing each other for a decade, most likely. The real purpose of your operation, my focus was again on Green, was to infect humans on Paradise who would spread the infection to the Ruhar. Your lizard masters plan to get revenge on UNEF who broke away from their control, and they plan to make the planet unable to support a battle group. If even a quarter of the hamsters there died, the rest would be screaming for their government to get them away from the planet, and no hamster would ever want to move to a diseased world. The Ruhar government would need to quarantine the place, and they would pull back their battle group.
He's lying again, Chisholm growled as his people shuffled their feet and looked at him for reassurance. We weren't given any weapons at all. We didn't need them for our mission. We sure as hell were not given any bioweapon.
Yes, you were. Adam stepped forward and poked Chisholm in the chest, a bit harder than I had done. He was getting pissed about that.
It's in here, she jabbed him again, hard enough that he took a stride backward.
You are all infected, I explained. That is why we are sealed up in these suits and why you will not be leaving this docking bay until we have a cure for you and a vaccine for us.
Or until you die.
Adam stepped back away from the red-faced Chisholm.
Data recovered from Camp Alpha indicates the incubation period is about 3 months for humans.
Now the keepers all began to talk amongst themselves. Hearing Adams reference Camp Alpha had struck a nerve.
What's wrong? I asked the group.
Come on. Some of you must have suspected you were getting used, again. The lizards tested their pathogen on multiple groups. They had a control group that was never infected. Those people were taken off Camp Alpha by a Jirapta ship, along with a mixed human Ruhar team. I left out the participation of the Verdcris to avoid confusing the issue. Groups of people would be separated, taken away from the base, and you'd never see them again? I could see that got a reaction. At least some of you idiots must have suspected something wasn't right. Seriously? I mocked them. You really thought the Kristang needed you to provide intel about Paradise? Think about it. Think. It would not be too long before one of you got recognized and the hamsters figured out that keepers who had left had somehow come back to the planet.
That's not true. Chisholm waved his hands frantically to calm his people down. We were trained to...
Trained to what? The hamsters have your DNA. Even UNEF has your DNA in a file somewhere. You were going to get caught eventually. A month, maybe 2 months, you could sneak around before somebody asked the wrong questions.
Ah, forget it. I waved a hand in disgust.
If you are stupid enough to believe the Kristang Warfleet needs you to take back control of the planet, then you are way too stupid to ever see reality.
Joe, there is an unpleasant surprise I just discovered. Skippy broke into the conversation.
It seems the Kristang did not entirely trust the crew of knuckleheads they sent on this mission. I have no idea why. As I can tell, these fools are totally trustworthy. Not, anywho, the Kristang were concerned the 20 stooges here would blab their mouths to someone on Paradise and expose the mission. These keepers would die eventually, of course, but that would take months, and the Kristang did not need them to live for more than a month. 1 month would be plenty of time for them to infect plenty of unsuspecting victims, people who could move around a lot more freely and spread the pathogen widely. As a precaution, the Kristang injected each one of them with an implant that will activate at the exact same time, about 28 days from their scheduled landing. This implant will burst blood vessels in their brains, so they will all drop dead instantly of massive aneurysms. The implants are timed to kill them all at the exact same moment, so one of these fools doesn't see his buddy drop dead and start shooting his mouth off before the implant kills him.
Where are these implants?
I took a half step back, subconsciously afraid of getting killed by proxy.
Like the suicide dots our away teams wear, the implants are at the back of the neck, near the brain stem. Our nanodots kill the wearer by electrical impulse. They are worn on the skin. They can be removed easily, and of course the wearer knows about them and decides whether to activate the suicide mechanism. The implants given to the keepers were inserted under the skin, and nanofibers spread along blood vessels to several places in their brains.
Can you turn them off? Get rid of them? Something like that?
Oh, I already postponed the activation sequence, but I can't guarantee there won't be a glitch, so to be safe, they need to be physically removed.
That can be accomplished easily enough. I will send in nanobots to disable and dissolve the Kristang implants.
Okay, we can do that when we...
You're not touching me with any of your goddamn machines, Chisholm growled.
We do know about those implants. The Kristang explained why they are needed and we all agreed to have them.
You're lying. The implants aren't dangerous to us. They are beacons so the Kristang can locate us when our mission is complete. Without the implants, we might mistakenly be targeted during a raid before the planet is taken back from the hamsters. The implants will pinpoint our location so we can be evac by stealth dropships when the Kristang are satisfied with the take from our intel.
Wow, Skippy's voice rang from the speakers.
That is a truly sterling example of self-delusion. Hey, asswipe, you know that isn't true. You morons are disposable to the Kristang. No way would they risk sending a stealth dropship down to pick up you losers. Seriously, you expect them to fly around willy-nilly to pick up all of you?
No. We will get a signal to gather in a prearranged remote location.
Chisholm glared at me.
That minimizes the risk of...
Oh, you have got to be kidding me.
Skippy's voice dripped with sarcasm.
Why would...
I cut off Skippy's disgusted comment before we wasted too much time on an irrelevant discussion.
As you reminded me, never argue with an idiot because they can't understand when they've lost.
Fine, I pointed to Chisholm. You can keep your implants. And we will even reset the timer back to its original setting. But anyone who does not get their implants disabled will be isolated, so you can't harm anyone else until you drop dead.
Got that?
That prompted a huddle around Chisholm by several keepers, with low voices and a lot of animated hand gestures. I politely did not eavesdrop on the argument. Okay, so it was not me being polite, I just did not want to listen to a bunch of fanatical dipshits trying to make a totally obvious decision. After 2 minutes, Chisholm stepped forward.
Colonel Bishop.
I could see referring to me as a colonel felt sour in his mouth.
We agree to have the implants disabled. Therefore, you have no excuse to isolate any of us.
He smirked as if he had just foiled an evil plot. We are one team, and we will remain strong together. Also, it appears a locator beacon will not do us any good now. You could easily block the transmission. My guess was he added that last part as a way to save face in front of his people. I truly did not care whether his people respected him or not.
Fine, I snapped. Here's what's going to happen. We are going to take samples of your blood and tissues.
Mad Dr. Skippy had been vague about how invasive and painful the sample collection process would be, and I truly did not care.
You are going to cooperate and live here.
I gestured to the portable shelters we had set up along the inner bulkhead of the docking bay. Until we have a cure, or until you die as the pathogen runs its course. We will not risk you infecting us or contaminating the rest of the ship, because we are going home, and UNEF Command won't let us off the ship if they think we might be carriers. I will now leave you to the kind tenderness of Gunnery Sergeant Adams. I nodded toward her. She will explain in detail your living arrangements and exactly how you will be cooperating. Keep this in mind. I scowled from one face to the next. We need samples of the pathogen to develop a cure, and we need subjects to test a cure. We do not need all of you for the procedure to be successful.
Sergeant Adams, she came to attention. I figure we need maybe 10 out of 20 of these losers, Max. If they give you any shit, you have my permission to break bones. If any of them give you serious trouble, I am ordering you to toss them out an airlock with this asshole. I pointed straight at Chisholm. Going first. In case any of you geniuses thinks Gunny Adams won't do it, here's a breaking news flash for you. That Krestang destroyer that brought you here? It is not coming to rescue you, because we took control and jumped it just above the surface of the star where those brave warriors had a few seconds to cry and piss in their pants before they got swallowed up by a fireball.
Adams here? Press the button to jump those lizards straight into hell. Do not piss her off. Or, I smiled with my mouth but not my eyes.
Do it. Please. One of you, try it. Make my day.
There weren't any takers for my dare. No matter how fanatical they were badly shaken up by their shocking sudden change of circumstances and by what I had told them. Even Chisholm cooperated, though he told his people to cooperate only so they could live to fight another day, fight for the Krestang. I did not care what he told them. Mad Dr. Skippy got his samples and began doing whatever it was Skippy did.
Chapter 33 2 days later, I saw Adams in the galley. How are our guests enjoying their luxury accommodations? She gave a long, exaggerated sigh, making a sort of motorboat noise with her lips. For a moment, I just stared at her, because I never imagined her doing something like that. There were so many layers to our tough gunnery sergeant, she was like an onion, wrapped in an onion. A sweet onion, like a... what are they called? Not Valvoline, that's a motor oil. Not Viagra, either. Something with a V. Vidalia, that's it. A Vidalia onion, not a sour one that makes you cry. Although Adams could make you cry if she wanted to. Despite the years we had served together, I barely knew her, the real Margaret Adams. That was maybe my one major regret that... I better drop that subject like a hot potato. Anyway, she sounded exasperated and disgusted.
Sir, I have to talk to you about that. I don't want to, but I'm kind of required to by the UCMJ.
The Uniform Code of Military Justice? Holy shit, I told myself. This could not be good. If Adams had seen fit to toss one of the keepers out an airlock, I was okay with that, but expected she would have notified me about it first. She should have immediately notified me about any serious incident, and again, holy shit, anything involving the UCMJ was no joke.
What?
It's nothing serious, sir. She must have seen the deer-in-the-headlights look on my face.
Some of them, that Chisholm guy mostly,
have been complaining about their treatment. One of them is a barracks lawyer. He cited sections of the Geneva Convention at me.
The Geneva freaking convention? I was astonished. Like that matters out here.
Actually, crap, it might.
The keepers were humans, and our mission was under the authority of UNEF command, so... damn it, maybe it did matter. My hell, I needed to ask Skippy. He knew all that legal stuff.
That's above my pay grade, Colonel.
She raised an eyebrow, having just successfully passed that particular buck to me.
Consider yourself officially notified, sir, she added with a twinkle in her eyes.
I loved to see Adam smile. It lit up her whole face. Gunny, I would love to give a shit about whether those goddamn keeper traders are happy about their living situation.
I'm guessing you don't.
Sadly, my shit-giving ability is currently offline, and it don't look good for getting it fixed anytime soon. I winked at her.
What should I tell the keepers? They demanded to meet with you, to present a list of grievances.
Grievance? I clamped my jaw shut to control my anger.
Tell that barracks lawyer I have him penciled in to meet with me at punch him in the face o'clock.
But if you would prefer kicking the balls 30, that's good for me too.
I don't think any of those cowards have balls, sir.
Punch in the face o'clock it is, then. Tell him he can meet me in the airlock. I'll give him a tour of the ship. From the outside. It will be a short tour, before his eyeballs explode from vacuum. Seriously, Adams, if that particular shithead were to suffer a terribly unfortunate accident involving powered armor and several vital organs, I would not be unhappy, if you know what I mean.
Well, I know what you mean, sir.
I do not know what Adams did, if anything, but I did not get any more complaints from the keepers. That I know of. Not that I asked, if you know what I mean. While we waited for Skippy to magically create a vaccine or cure for the bioweapon, I tried to keep the crew's spirits up by requesting people to create lists like what favorite food they would eat when we got back to Earth, what places they wanted to visit during the leave they would be granted after debriefing, happy stuff like that. One thing I did not do was ask about the family and friends people were looking forward to reconnecting with, because thinking about how long we had been away from our loved ones was bound to be painful, and exactly the opposite of the happy morale boost I was hoping for. It did not surprise me that while I was looking forward to finally seeing home again, our high-speed Spec Ops warriors and hotshot pilots had mixed feelings about it. Major Smythe openly told me he would miss the adrenaline rush of combat, and just never knowing what gut-wrenching crisis we would be dealing with the next day. All of the Spec Ops teams worried they would be trapped dirtside after this mission, as their national militaries would want at least some of them to stay home to transfer their knowledge and train other troops in space combat techniques. The pilots were worried about having to fly slow, boring aircraft and helicopters again, and never even getting above low Earth orbit. There wasn't anything I could say to soothe their fears, as I had no idea what UNEF Command planned to do with the crew once we landed on our home planet. There was another person aboard the ship, not technically a member of the crew, who had seriously mixed feelings about going home. Hans Chotek was worried about UNEF Command's reaction to how long we had been away on what was supposed to be a simple and short mission. Yes, we had successfully confirmed the Theranin were not sending another surveyor ship to Earth, and yes, we had stopped the Ruha from sending a ship paid for by the Kristang. Those were both major items in the plus column for sure. Even our having saved the human population of Paradise twice hopefully counted as wins. But we had also risked exposure on Paradise 2 times, okay, technically 3 times, and our beer can had proven to have judgment as trustworthy as a meth addict with a pocket full of stolen credit cards. We nearly got trapped by a task force of combined Theranin, Bosphorak, and, oh yeah, don't forget Max Ulk's ships. We broke an Elder wormhole. We had messed with a freaking Elder Sentinel killing machine. It was almost not worth mentioning that we engaged in combat with a Max Ulk's warship, and that a Max Ulk's had committed suicide aboard our ship. All that bad, or at least risky stuff happened on Hans Chotek's watch, all of which he expected to catch hell about from chair-bound bureaucrats when we got home. And all of which did not compare to the fact that career diplomat Hans Chotek started an alien civil war. I almost felt sorry for the guy. I scratched that. I did feel sorry for him. There was another person I felt sorry for. Myself. UNEF Command had not wanted me as captain of, or even aboard, the Flying Dutchman the last time we left Earth. They viewed me as too young and too prone to take risks before. They were going to be just thrilled to hear what trouble I had gotten us into this time.
My stomach got queasy every time I thought of the major ass-chewing I would get as soon as my boots hit the ground. Anyway, to keep my mind off the fate that awaited me on Earth, I took our enforced idleness as an opportunity to ask Skippy about something. My hope was I could bring some good news home to UNEF Command, and maybe they'd forget about all that other shit. Which was never going to happen, but I figured I should give the self-delusion thing a try. Hey, Skippy.
Hey, Joe. What do you propose to waste my time with now?
How do you know that I'm good? Oh, forget it. I have a question. Now that you are the new, better-than-ever, fresh scent, Skippy.
Fresh scent?
I do not have a scent. Or do I? He gasped in shuddering horror.
I have never asked you if...
No, Skippy, don't worry about it. I just meant that fresh scent is something marketing people say when they describe an improved product.
Did this product previously smell like rotten fish?
Well, in that case, fresh scent would be a big improvement, right?
I can't argue with that. The way I would describe myself is more awesome than ever.
How about 50% more awesome for the same price?
I like your thinking.
Anywho, what is your question?
Can the new awesome beyond imagination Skippy share even a tiny bit of technology with us poor monkeys soon, like when we get to Earth? You said you were working on that after you rearranged your sock drawers or whatever you do in there.
Why do I ever try explaining technology to you?
Okay, at your pathetic level of development, rearranging my sock drawer is an appropriate bacteria-level understanding of the mind-bogglingly incredible...
Yeah, blah, 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 you're awesome. Listen, has rewriting your internal software loosened your restrictions yet? The annoying subroutines or whatever that prevent you from flying ships by yourself, sharing technology with us, all that?
Not yet, Joe, he scolded me. I told you I'm working on it.
Damn, I should never have mentioned that possibility to you. I do not know yet, you dum-dum. Rewriting my software, which is a bad analogy that makes you think the task is much easier than it truly is, has proved to be an extremely delicate problem. I am having to create sort of a model of myself so I can test changes in a controlled environment instead of taking the risk of damaging myself. If I screw something up, I might be unable to undo the damage, and then we would be right back to my operating at reduced, perhaps severely reduced, capacity. Would you like me to take that risk?
No. No, I very much did not like it when you were acting drunk or high or brain damaged or whatever was wrong with you. The last thing I need is you waking me up at 0:30 to marvel at the freaking universe. You take all the time you need to get that sock drawer squared away and I'll keep my mouth shut.
Right, because you are so good at being patient. If I am able to share my galaxy-spanning knowledge of physics, what are you hoping for?
Now I was embarrassed, but I had to ask. You know, you help us build our own starships. Badass warships, not like this piece of crap we're flying.
What?
He chuckled. No, he snickered. That's a better way of describing it.
No, Joe, we will not be doing any science fiction shit like that.
I told you before, just bringing Earth's industrial infrastructure up to the point where humans can build the machines, just to build the machines we need to build other machines to begin constructing a single starship, will take well over 100 years, if nothing goes wrong.
And I told you humanity doesn't have any other appointments over the next couple 100 years.
We should get started pronto. Joe, you can forget any nonsense about a single planet of monkeys building a war fleet to take on the whole freaking galaxy.
Listen, Skippy. I know the hostile aliens out there have thousands, hundreds of thousands, Joe. The Maxoaks Coalition alone could easily mobilize 30,000 warships to throw against Earth, and they would not be straining their resources.
That's a lot of ships, sure, but we don't need to take the fight to the enemy. All we need to have is a defense strong enough that the enemy doesn't want to pay the price of hitting us. With your help, your knowledge of Elder-level technology, couldn't we build a strong defense in, say, a couple 100 years? Assuming we can keep nosy aliens away from Earth that long?
That is all a great fantasy, Joey. Except for the teensy-weensy little fact that you do not have even 100 years to get started. The clock is ticking down to doomsday, no matter what you do.
But like I said, assume we can keep aliens from coming to Earth. We've been doing a pretty good job at keeping them away so far.
As I said that, I mentally pictured karma chuckling as it got ready to bite me on the ass.
The problem is not simply aliens flying to Earth. The problem, Joe, is the speed of light.
What?
Speed of light, you dum-dum.
I got the dum-dum part. What is the speed of light?
Oh, shit. Wow, that time I actually saw the 40-watt bulb of understanding light up in your head. It's a dim bulb, barely visible, like if it was buried under 30 feet of mud and...
You're saying light from Earth is radiating outward, and no matter what we do, that light will be seen out in the galaxy? The problem is radio waves?
Correct! You monkeys could not resist blabbing your mouths off after we, or actually I, destroyed the Kristang who were enslaving your planet. Your news programs broadcast reports and images of the Flying Dutchman in orbit, and Kristang sites getting blown up all over your planet. Even without radio and TV signals, the gamma-ray bursts of us jumping in and out, and from when I jumped that Kristang frigate into your sun, are going to be visible, and will be considered highly suspicious.
Crap. Okay, so those radio and TV waves and gamma rays will be detected by some hostile alien's telescope or sensor platform. Give me the bad news. How close is the nearest alien listening post, or telescope, or whatever?
The closest such sensor platform to Earth is 294 light-years.
Oh. I breathed a sigh of relief. Damn, Skippy, you got me into a panic for nothing. We have almost 300... No, wait. It's been a couple years since the Dutchman first jumped into Earth orbit, so...
Signals traveling from Earth are not the problem, dum-dum, Skippy chided me more gently than he usually did when I said something stupid.
No? Well, then what? Most of the time my brain was annoyingly slow, just like Skippy said. This time, however, I got it right away.
Ah, shit. The problem isn't gamma rays coming from Earth. The problem is gamma rays every time you reopen that wormhole that is supposed to be dormant.
Exactly, Joe. Very good.
Well, that time I was not belittling your intelligence. You caught on quickly.
Maybe being around me has smartened you up a bit.
Yes, that Elder wormhole is supposed to be shut down, but we have used it 3 times since then. Outbound and return on our second mission, plus outbound on this current mission that has lasted way longer than anyone expected. We will be using that wormhole again to get back to Earth and outbound for our next mission. Whenever we use that mostly dormant wormhole, I open it in a location far away from its original program pattern, but someone is going to notice gamma rays coming from a wormhole that is supposed to be inactive. They are going to notice multiple gamma rays events at odd intervals, and that is going to look very suspicious.
Tell me the bad news, Skippy. How close is an alien sensor platform to the far end of that wormhole?
62 light-years, Joe. That is why I have been telling you we do not have time to enhance Earth's infrastructure and build a bodaciously awesome war fleet or a Death Star or something stupid like that.
We have only 62 years?
Less than 60 years since the first time we used that wormhole after I shut it down. Those gamma-ray bursts have been radiating outward, and there is nothing we can do to stop them.
In 60 years, human technology had gone from the first powered flight by the Wright brothers to jet airliners. Could we...
Wait, how about this? We fly out to this alien sensor platform. In my mind, I pictured a single satellite hanging in space all by itself. And you hack into it and tell it to ignore those gamma rays.
No, Joe. There is not a sensor platform. 62 light-years from the far end of that wormhole is a Theranin planet with a fleet servicing base. Even if the ships have their entire sensor suite powered down for maintenance, there are hundreds of other sensors in orbit, and on the surface, that could pick up those gamma rays.
Okay, but, you are thinking the magic of Skippy could hack into every system on and around that planet, right?
Forget about it.
Joe, there have been multiple gamma-ray events because we used that wormhole multiple times. Sensor systems get regular updates, so I would need to keep going back there to hack in every time a gamma-ray burst is about to pass through that system. Expanding a bubble outward from that wormhole, there is another inhabited star system 65 light-years away, 2 systems that are 70 light-years away, and if you go out to an 80 light-year radius, there are 14 star systems that could detect those gamma rays. It is just not practical to conceal all those gamma rays from enemy eyes, Joe. I am sorry.
Well, shit. What could we accomplish in 60 years if we tried really hard?
You could make a really big white flag that says we surrender.
Oh, shit.
You could also do a lot of praying. And hey, maybe you could bake a cake for the aliens who come to invade and obliterate your homeworld. It would have to be a really nice cake.
Not funny, Skippy.
There is absolutely nothing amusing about the situation, Joe. I also do not see any way out of this mess. But I'm not worried about it.
You are not worried about it.
That is a rotten thing to say, Skippy. Just because you are not personally in danger, we... Joe, I am not worried about it because I am sure you monkeys will think of something. You are quite clever.
Oh. I was ashamed of myself for thinking Skippy was heartless about the prospect of my home world being blown up.
Thanks for the vote of...
If not, you are totally screwed. Like every star-faring species in the galaxy descending on your planet and tearing the place apart. Then probably nuking it until it is a radioactive cinder. Although that's probably the best-case scenario.
Shit. Shit indeed.
Damn it. You're telling me all the work we've done out here, stopping aliens from sending ships to Earth, has been for nothing?
Not nothing, Joe. We've been buying time.
Come on, Joe. Nothing lasts forever. Giving the people of Earth another 60 years of pleasantly blissful ignorance is a worthy goal. Just think of how many people will fall in love over the next 60 years, how many people will achieve their life goals, how much happiness the population of Earth can experience in 60 years.
I had not thought of it that way, Skippy. I guess buying time is worth our effort.
Yep. Before you know, Earth inevitably becomes a lifeless ball of dust.
Skippy, if I ever ask you to cheer me up, please remind me of this conversation.
Oh, no problemo, Joe. Glad we had this little talk, if it makes you feel better about the inevitable extinction of your species. See, I am totally nailing this empathy shit.
I had been hoping I could tell UNEF Command that the whole scary year of agony we had gone through with Skippy's fight with the worm was worth it, because the new improved Skippy could share advanced technology with us, and Earth could build a badass war fleet to protect us from an entire galaxy of hostile aliens. Instead, I would be telling them that humanity not only didn't have time to build a single starship of our own, our entire species had less than 60 years to live. Maybe I better order a super nice fruit basket to soften the blow when I deliver that steaming pile of news.
Chapter 34. Skippy had warned me that just identifying the elements of the pathogen and how precisely it sneakily used human DNA to create itself and replicate could take a while, like possibly weeks in meat sack time if he could do it at all. He needed to not only find the weapon's components in the blood and tissues of infected people, he needed to match them to the data recovered by the Mavericks, then run exhaustive tests to make sure the pathogen had not already mutated beyond recognition. If it had mutated substantially, he would need to start over. He did not sound optimistic, even when I told him the merry band of pirates were all in on trusting the awesomeness this time.
Bioweapons are not my wheelhouse, Joe, he had grumbled irritably after the first set of samples were placed into the lab we set up in a corner of the docking bay. And the medical equipment aboard this second-hand Franken ship is not the best to work with. Be patient.
Thus I was rather depressed about the possibility we would not find a cure, and therefore the human population of Paradise would continue to be at high risk. When we jumped away, we targeted to be within 2 light hours of a Ruha communications relay station within its line-of-sight narrow-casting cone pointed toward Paradise. Skippy was able to monitor message traffic dropped off by passing starships, and from encrypted traffic we knew the Ruha federal government was coming under increasing pressure to do something about the risk posed by humans on Paradise. Most of that pressure was ironically not coming from Paradise, but from other Ruha worlds who feared an infection spreading to them. All ship traffic to and from the Paradise system was embargoed, nothing in and nothing out. Of the hamsters on Paradise clamoring for extreme action to be taken to remove the human threat, most were recent arrivals. A great majority of longtime inhabitants, even those who lived through UNEF's brief and bumbling occupation, were against any attempt to relieve the threat by killing all the humans, although no one argued against a strictly enforced quarantine. The Ruha had appealed to the Jarraptha, who agreed to examine the data taken from Camp Alpha. Regrettably, the Jarraptha announced that type of bioweapon was unknown to them, and their research could not proceed far without samples of the actual pathogen. The patron species of the Ruha also warned that according to their preliminary studies, the pathogen was a very, very clever bioweapon, as it could plausibly be a natural mutation of human DNA. An unlikely mutation, but difficult to prove as a violation of the rules. The Beatles assured the Ruha they had mentioned the incident to the Rindaloo, who responded that they would investigate the incident if there was an actual outbreak on Paradise. And even in that case, the next meeting of the Rindaloo Council to launch an investigation would not be for another 3.5 years. Any actual investigation would not begin for another 5 to 8 years after a proper time for deliberation, Those who knew the Rindaloo well were amazed and impressed the spiders were acting so quickly, a sign the senior species was taking the bioweapon threat seriously. Anyway, I mentioned all that to demonstrate that we basically were on our own in trying to find a cure and vaccine for the deadly pathogen. The Ruha lacked the technology and understanding to even identify the pathogen's base components in an infected human or Ruha. The Beatles were treating the incident as an unexpected and exciting opportunity to wager on how many intelligent beings would die on Paradise. No, that was unfair of me to say that. Of course, the Jurapta could not resist such juicy action, and they promised to help enforce the embargo around Paradise and hunt for a Krestang ship, but the recent attacks by the Bosphorok had caught the Beatles off guard, and they were scrambling to redeploy their fleet. And the all-powerful ancient Rindaloo? Well, they might consider considering the problem, if it became an actual problem. The Rindaloo could never be described as a hasty species. Ents move faster. So do glaciers. Knowing all that, you can understand why I was not sleeping well, and why I was mostly awake and tossing and turning in my bunk at 0123 hours when Skippy's avatar shimmered to life above my chest. Joe. Joe. Gah! What the hell, Skippy? I sputtered with a dry mouth. I have good news. Ooh, wow. You do not look so good right when you wake up. I mean, you are a monkey, so I know not to expect much, but damn, dude! Yeah, I'm really concerned about how I look at Zero Dark 30. What is it? Joe, seriously, you should reconsider rejecting that sex bot, I should say, companion I built for you. She wouldn't mind how you look in the wee hours of the morning. I can't imagine a real human woman not being totally horrified by... That bot was an it, not a she, Skippy. Please, tell me your good news or I am throwing a pillow over my head and going back to sleep. Okay, okay. Damn. This is the thanks I get for being your wingman. Skippy! Fine. The good news is I have created what I believe is a cure for the pathogen, and vaccines, not only for humans, but for Ruha also. Holy shit. I sat bolt upright in bed, so of course I whacked my head. With news that good, I ignored the pain. You said it could take weeks, maybe months, if it could be done at all. Joe, I underestimated my own magnificence. Uh-huh, right. Did you pull a Scotty on us? A Scotty? He asked innocently, with his voice just a touch too innocent. Yeah, like, you say that fixing the warp engines will take 6 hours in a miracle, and you have the job done in 30 minutes? Oh, ha ha! Skippy snickered. That's a good one. I'll have to remember that. No, I did not do that, Joe. Truly, if anything, I understated the difficulty of the effort. When I first examined the pathogen components, the subroutine I assigned to the task wanted to curl up in a ball and cry. It was, as you New Englanders would say, wicked hard. Okay, so what changed? I decided that approaching the task as a biological problem was not going to lead me anywhere. So, I looked at human DNA as an information storage and processing system. What? Joe, DNA is not just a bunch of colored balls connected by sticks like in your high school science lab. It is a powerful chemical-based data storage system, quite efficient for its size. It is also a handy factory for churning out organic chemicals, which is how the Krestang were able to use modified DNA to create the prion base components. The cure I have created is pure genius. Even I am amazed by my awesomeness this time. This cure not only prevents the infected person's DNA from replicating more of the base components, it acts as a monitoring and repair mechanism for DNA to prevent harmful mutations. To a limited extent, of course. If a person gets a bad dose of radiation, their DNA will be damaged beyond any self-repair capability my cure can provide. Excellent. Outstanding. And a vaccine, too? As you would say, Aya. It did not sound right when Skippy said it, but I didn't protest. The cure and the vaccine are the same mechanism. Well, mostly. The vaccine is part of the cure. The vaccine will prevent a person from becoming infected, and it can stop an infected person's DNA from making more of the pathogen. The cure has a second element that latches onto one base component of the prion, so it can never assemble into anything dangerous. After a while, my guess is 4 to 6 months, the base components will dissolve on their own. The vaccine I developed for the Ruha is much simpler, as the genetically enhanced biology of that species has a vastly superior immune response. All my vaccine does is allow the Ruha version of DNA to create sort of antibodies to identify the pathogen components, and the hamster immune system will take care of the rest. Skippy, this is truly awesome. When can you begin testing?
I left a message for Sergeant Adams to schedule it for 0800 this morning after the keepers wake up.
Oh, screw that. Hell, I'm up. We're doing it now if you have doses of the cure ready.
Well, I've been manufacturing the cure. Within the hour, I will have enough doses for 4 people.
Are you sure about rousing people out of bed at this ungodly hour? He asked cluelessly after having roused me out of bed.
We've been away from Earth way too freaking long. I did not mention a good part of that time was because of his battle with the worm. And every minute that goes by, there could be a dangerous incident on Paradise that might put people, humans, there, in danger. Some hamster kid gets the sniffles, the parents remember the kid came into contact with a human last month, and next thing you know, there is a full-blown panic with frightened hamster civilians chasing humans with pitchforks and torches, hitting them with SD maser cannons from orbit. So hell no, I'm not waiting another 6 hours just so those keeper assholes can get a couple more hours of sleep and a nice breakfast. I will call Adams. You get all your mad doctor stuff ready. The keepers did not like being rousted from bed 4 hours early. As former military, they also were used to it and did not complain too much. We got 4 volunteers for testing the cure, including the British soldier Nigel Green. Unlike Chisholm, Green was more of a scared, vulnerable, and gullible kid rather than a truly committed fanatic. Chisholm caused trouble, shouting warnings that they were not infected, that the supposed cure was in fact a bioweapon we were testing on them, and that... We never got to hear the end of Chisholm's entertaining diatribe, as Adams had picked him up and casually tossed him across the docking bay to crash into the outer bay doors. He broke 1 arm and 2 ribs, and with him no longer agitating, the rest of the keepers were much more docile. Personally, I think the only reason Adams didn't toss that stupid asshole out an airlock was she hoped for another opportunity to really beat the shit out of him. 6 days later, Skippy was confident enough with the results from the 4 volunteers that he wanted to expand the testing to the others. All of them. I provided an incentive in the form of real food for volunteers, as the keepers had been surviving on sludges that were left over from our Newark mission. And yes, I made sure the keepers ate the truly nasty banana-flavored sludges first so we could get rid of them. Even Chisholm offered to be tested, after seeing the first 4 volunteers eating fresh salads, fresh strawberries, french fries, and cheeseburgers. It was a sign of my generous beneficence that I gave precious cheeseburgers to the keepers. We were running very low on cheeseburger components. It was a big sacrifice not to eat them all myself. The keepers' mouths were watering as they watched Green and the 3 others chow down on cheeseburgers, a treat they had not enjoyed since long before they left Paradise. 8 days after that, Skippy contacted me in my office. Joe, I am completely, absolutely satisfied with the test results. The keepers are cured 100%. The vaccine, too? I had been the first volunteer to be injected with the test vaccine over the objections of Adams, Chotek, Chang, and others. The vaccine also, completely, satisfyingly successful. This is one of my greatest triumphs, truly. What is most amazing about me is that I have somehow managed to amaze myself. Hoo-hoo, boy! Never thought that could happen. What are the odds, huh?
Those odds must, be more than my monkey brain could calculate, I agreed quickly, to short-circuit him going on a long tangent about how awesomely awesome he was.
That's great. You ready to transmit the package, then?
Ready at the first opportunity. I'll talk with Chotek to get permission.
Damn, I can't believe we're finally going home.
Oh, yeah. Joy. Another soul-stirring visit to that miserable ball of mud orbiting a boring yellow dwarf star. Who wouldn't be just thrilled about that?
Think of this as your opportunity to finally give smart replies to those idiots who said nasty things to you on Facebook last time.
Ooh, good point. That little Jimmy What's-His-Name is so going to regret his ignorant comment about Galaxy Quest. Big jerk.
Well, I'm sure he will.
Chotek approved sending what we called the package. Our opportunity came when a passing Giraffe the ship exchanged messages with the communications relay. The relay sent the messages onward to Paradise, including a large dump of data Skippy had previously loaded into the relay's databanks. To the Ruhar on Paradise, it would look like our package had been delivered by the Giraptha ship. The package contained extensive analysis, test results, and instructions how to manufacture the cure and vaccines for both humans and Ruhar. Embedded in the package were subtle hints that miracle cure had been provided by the Maxalts, who were embarrassed and pissed off that clients under them had acted in such a rash manner that might blow back on the senior species.
Then, we had to wait and hope the Ruha would take action.
Bingo!
Good news, Joe! Skippy shouted excitedly over my Z-phone while I was in the gym. At least he hadn't interrupted me in the shower, so I counted that one in the W column. Carefully letting the bench press bar settle into the clamps, I sat up and pulled the phone off my belt.
You sound happy. Did you just think of a way to persuade Jimmy he was wrong about, what was it?
Galaxy Quest, Joe. No, this is not about frivolous arguments with strangers on the Internet. I have great news. And, kind of a problem.
Could we speak in private?
Sure thing, Skippy. I walked into a passageway and turned left to go aft. There were plenty of mostly empty cargo bays in that direction.
What's up?
The Ruha government on Paradise, led by your old friend the Burgermeister, has just approved a testing program for the human vaccine. UNEF has over 1,000 volunteers. Well, not UNEF exactly, because, as you know, the force part of UNEF is dissolving rapidly.
Wow, that is great news. What about the Ruha form of the vaccine?
That is being tested also, with a lot fewer volunteers. Finding test subjects for the hamster form of vaccine is less important because the Ruha have sophisticated techniques for modeling the vaccine's effectiveness in computer models and in tissue samples.
Remember how in the village of Teskor you saw the farmer there growing meat without growing the entire animal?
Yes, I remember, I agreed with an involuntary shudder. It was kind of creepy.
The humans on Paradise would disagree, because the Ruha have pilot programs to adapt that meat-growing technology to foods humans can eat.
Cheeseburgers may soon be back on the menu for people on Paradise, Joe.
Outstanding.
But how does that affect vaccine testing? If he went off on a tangent, I might forget the questions I needed to ask.
Because the hamsters have laboratory versions of their bodies without any sort of higher brain functions. These lab shells, as they are called, allow the Ruha to run complete and accurate tests under controlled conditions. They can vaccinate shells, then infect them with a pathogen.
Joe, when they do that, they will see my vaccine is 100% effective. That should relieve the pressure on their federal government to, he cleared his throat, do something about humans. We both know what do something means.
Yeah, we do. Skippy, this is truly excellent.
One question for you. In your gift package about the cure and vaccines, you hinted it was from the Maxalts. Did the Ruha buy that? I'm concerned the Maxalts will find out about it, and they sure know they weren't involved.
Well, that is two questions, dum-dum.
Man, you never learn. Okay, first, yes, the Ruha totally bought it, because they know that pathogen took seriously advanced biotech to create, so it makes sense the Maxalts might have been involved.
Second, no way would the Maxalts deny taking credit for providing that gift package.
Duh! It gives them a plausible way out if they someday are involved in a bioweapon attack, because they will say their involvement in providing this vaccine proves they are strictly against any violations of the rules.
Also, the Maxalts will assume the whole mess was the work of the Bosphorak, which is what I suspect anyway. Giving the Maxalts credit for providing the vaccine will be seen as a sort of get-out-of-jail-free card played by the Bosphorak. I do not see any downside for us in this.
Great. Of course, I did not see any downside to us telling the Jirapta about a sneak attack by the Theranin, and that blew up in our faces big time. So, maybe I'm not the best person to ask.
As always, I am bursting with confidence after talking with you, Skippy.
Don't kill the messenger, Joe.
Sorry.
Okay, so how long do we have to hang around here until we know for certain the vaccine works?
No, wait, I mean, until the Ruha government decides humans are no longer a threat and they lift the quarantine.
We don't need to wait here, Joe. We can get underway and ping a Ruha communications relay before we leave their territory. Before we make the final jump to the wormhole I shut down, there will be plenty of time for the news to get ahead of us.
Wow, that is great to hear.
Chotek will be thrilled.
Ah, shit.
What?
You said there is a problem we need to talk about.
Ah, yeah. He did an awkward throat-clearing sound. You need to decide whether bringing me back to Earth is worth the risk.
The, what?
Ugh, come on, Joe. I bared my soul to you. I thought we had an honest-to-God moment. And you've forgotten about it already?
Refresh my memory, okay?
Oh. I snapped my fingers.
Hell, is this that idiot thing about you being a dire threat to the galaxy because you suspect that Elder AI killed the planet Newark?
I strongly suspect that, and yes, it is about that. Bringing me close to your home planet may not be the best idea.
Ah, damn it, Skippy. Are we going to do this every time we go somewhere sensitive?
Listen, I asked you before. Do you feel like going on a genocidal killing spree?
Well, maybe against the Max Hulks, but they totally deserve it.
Okay, then. And the